Hey, and welcome to Chicago Beer Pass. I'm Brad Chmielewski.
Brad, what's up, man? I'm Nick White.
And we are on location today. We teased it last week, but we're over here at Forbidden Root.
You bet your ass we are, man. And we got a doozy, man. Let's name these gentlemen here. Thanks for having us. Thanks for being on the show, first of all. We've got head brewer, Nick Williams.
Hey there.
All right. We've got the COO, Kevin McGillen.
Hey, guys.
And we've got a man who needs no introduction, one of the most respected minds in beer, Mr. Randy Mosier's here.
Yeah. Hey, guys.
Yeah, thanks for having us. Thanks for inviting us out, guys. It's great. I live right around the corner, so I'm always here checking out new beers. That burger, Nick and I rave about that all the time.
It's a constant debate, man. We're like, you know, some people say Forbidden Root, some people say Own an Engine. Yeah. And I'm like, dude, I just have to go back-to-back nights to get to the bottom of this, man.
It can be a constant contest. That's all right.
Yeah.
That's all right.
So I guess stepping back for anyone who hasn't heard of Forbidden Root yet or doesn't know what you guys do, like, what's kind of the focus? What's kind of the, I guess, the mantra here?
You want to field that one?
I guess I will. Well, you know, we started as a project to do a root beer. You know, so we got onto kind of an idea to do some botanic brewing really early on. And, you know, we went from root beer to key lime ginger beer to the wildflower pale ale that we have that's still in the market. And basically we're not trying to make medieval gruit or some Ren Faire thing. You know, we're really trying to explore the boundaries of beer and use every possible ingredient. And when we use an ingredient, even if it's just malt and hops, we want to dig into it real deep and, like, understand the chemistry, understand what's going on with the ingredients, understand where it comes from, and all of that. And so, you know, we've got a pretty wide range of products. Because we're a brew pub that's also doing production, we have to have pretty easy to approach beers, but we can also have some really interesting, really unique, even crazy kind of beers from time to time. So
yeah,
we're trying to really do a pretty wide range of things that nobody else is doing. So
yeah, when I walked in, Kevin, I was going for the Atomic Child, going for the Haze, or that's what we've been doing lately. Oh, but Kevin's like, no, man, you gotta get in on this. What was it? It was a sour. It's sour New England style, right?
Well, I'm not going to speak for Nick, who can get into the nuts and bolts of this, but our general manager of the restaurant, Brian Krajek, has been, I don't know, badger is perhaps too aggressive of a word.
No, not really. Pounding.
He was so insistent on this new style that he had from Hudson Valley.
Yep.
A sour New England style IPA, and he said, you guys have got to make this and put our Forbidden Root spin on it. And that's what Nick did. He put our Forbidden Root spin on a sour New England style IPA. Did I get that right?
Yeah, for the most part. We were really, both Randy, myself, and Kevin, as well as Phil, our brewer, we're all kind of enamored with it when we tried it. It's just a really beautiful style. Everybody I think that's kind of part of the, you know, the Haze Bro society, you know, loves New England for all the things that we love about them. They're juicy, their mouthfeel is huge, everything. And so to combine that with the other sort of craze of the last, you know, four, five, six, however long years, of sour beer and to have that together in this like one neat, nice little package that everybody can digest. Well, I guess literally and figuratively digest, but that everybody can drink. It's a fantastic style, and we wanted to sort of dip our toe in, and we dipped our toe in really lightly the first time. Yeah. We had about four barrels of it that came out. So yeah, I don't know, barrels, 124 gallons.
Okay.
Nice. And this one's blackberry.
This one's blackberry. So these are kettle soured, which is, I don't know how.
Sexy times. I might just dim the lights.
Man. Yeah.
That's our beer drinking timer. When the lights go off, if you don't have a beer in your hand, you got to start over. I don't know. I don't know how much we need to explain about kettle sour or not. Kettle sour is, you know, the way to do that. My most immediate background has been in sour and mixed culture beer.
Okay.
I've been in North Carolina brewing for 10 years prior to coming to Chicagoland area. I started out doing almost exclusively German lagers. And for the last several years, I've been doing almost exclusively barrel-aged mixed culture and sour beers. So I would love to eventually incorporate that into the idea, but for the moment, we're doing kettle sours because they're kind of quick, easy, and delicious. We're looking forward to, you know, putting more than a toe in. In the future. We've liked the result that we got. I'm glad that you guys seem
well,
to...
Well, I still got... I got to try that.
Okay. It's nice. Yeah. It's really nice.
We'll get on. So, yeah, the first one was blackberry, and that just happened to be because we had a lot of blackberry puree sort of around, ready to be used, needing to be used. Yeah. And that's sort of why that happened. There's no rhyme or reason other than that.
Yeah.
It seems like in the last year, you guys have, like, ramped up the beers more so. In the first, like, year, it was that key lime, more of the more interesting kind of beers that you weren't seeing in Chicago or even anywhere. And now you've kind of gone more in that kettle sour, the New England IPA, kind of maybe more, I want to say more approachable beers or beers that people have seen versus, like, here's a ginger beer. And people are like, oh, I don't know, where's your pale ale, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of been a little bit of a shift. Is that something you guys have thought about? But you're always taking a spin on it. So.
Well, I think part of it is when you're starting out, you know, it's hard now with so many breweries, 230 breweries in Chicago area or something like that. You can't just start out and make, oh, we're going to make a pale ale. Like, it's really not enough. And so when you strike out with a particular idea, you have to come put the flag in the sand, you know, like, this is what we stand for. This is who we are. This is this is what we're all about. This is why we're different. And so the root beer and the key lime ginger and the WPA all sort of came out of that. And of course, at that time, we didn't have a brew pub either. Right. So, but you know, once we've sort of established who we are, trying to get people to understand what we're all about, then we can kind of take a step back, attack the New England IPAs, try and find ways to make them our own, you know, that we're more understanding of what our own point of view is in terms of our approach to botany and material science and fermentation and all of those things. And so, you know, once you've got that, started to get that idea out there, then you can kind of back up and do the beers that on the surface may look a little more conventional, but really we'd like to understand them in that way that we do, you know, with get the pipetter out and start blending stuff up and check out three different kinds of coriander and, like, whatever it happens to be, you know.
Botany. That's a fun word. You know, and I walked in on you guys and you guys were doing your brainstorming session, and Randy has these, you know, it's like just a little bit of vodka with some kind of fruit and you know, some kind of test tube, right? Here's my question. I was talking to Ray Daniels, right? And he mentioned that long, long ago, you and him had a conversation about perhaps starting a brewery. We're talking like 90s, maybe earlier than that. And I'm wondering if you did that, if it would have looked kind of like some of the projects like this one, like the one you're on now. Like, do you think it would have looked like that, the project you guys were going
to
start?
It's so hard to say. And
that's a heavy question.
We did, well,
it blew my mind.
We did more than just talk about it. We spent a year with restaurant partners trying to find a location and get a brewery or a brew pub or something set up. And we would have been the first brewery in Ravenswood by 10 years.
Wow.
Right? Yeah. At least, because that was in the mid-90s. And we got chased out of there by the manufacturers with torches and pitchforks. You know, because it's like, oh, they're going to piss on your lawn. And it's going to be stinky. And
it's not for Wrigley. They
didn't want retail in there because their rents would go up.
Okay.
So they went to the neighborhood guys and just terrorized them, and that was the end of it. I think in the end, neither of us wanted it bad enough to stop doing what we were doing. City of Joliet was going to give us a building for a dollar, but we didn't really want to move to Joliet very badly. So nothing wrong with Joliet, but that's just not where we were, you know. So we kind of like, yeah, could have been, but, you know, sometimes those things in life, you never know.
Right on. Yeah. There was an article that came out recently from NPR, and it talked about yeast. It talked about genetically modified yeast and how they can take the yeast and have it, like, you know, impart flavors of hops, right? What are your guys' thoughts on something like that? You know, as a brewer, would you involve a yeast into your process that mimicked hops, right? Would you guys ever do that?
Truffles, maybe.
Truffles.
I mean, we got hops, right? We can use hops. you know, that you can get hops in all kinds of different formats. You can get like hop oils. You can get all kinds of different products. We've tried a lot of them. You know, we're always looking for to find that magic bullet, you know, some trick that somebody else doesn't have. And those hop oils just never quite taste really exactly like when you reuse real hops.
Really?
You know? So there's just, there's a lot of extracts and potions and things of fruit and of spices and of hops and all kinds of things. And they never, there's ways to use them. And we do use them from time to time in the right place and time. But they're never really a substitute for the real thing. They're sort of an augmentation, you know. So I can imagine mass market beer, they need a little bit of hop flavor. They could save themselves $1 million a year, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. But for us, no. I mean, we're using, how many pounds have we put in that power trip per barrel?
4.9 pounds per barrel. Nothing crazy, just five pounds of hops per barrel.
We've done eight.
Okay.
Right. We've done eight. That was the lightened version of it because we were trying a couple new things specifically to the first time around was the power trip. Now we're calling maybe something else. Welcome Wagon, I think maybe the name. We changed up the yeast a little bit and we changed up the hops quite a bit, but yeah. Sorry. But yeah, so that was one of the heavier ones. We turned it into a lighter one. We're trying out this new a dried version of a New England yeast.
Okay.
Dry Conan yeast is sort of one of the standards of the industry. And
so, speaking of ingredients, you guys must have like a crazy closet or back room of just like catwalk.
There is a catwalk above.
It's right up there. Yeah. There's just boxes of. Yeah. Cocoa shells and root beer goop. And,
the amount you have to order versus other breweries root. Has to be like, I need like a case of this. And they're like, who are you? What do you need?
Yeah.
Well, I'm not kidding. Every day, literally every day, UPS shows up with another box from another country with another spice and another extract. I'm not kidding. Every day. And it's Nick and Randy and Robert, our owner, that... put all these things together, and this pursuit of flavor and experience is unbelievable.
But it's also Robert who stays up till 3 or 4 a.m. every day and gets like, sometimes it'll be like a big box of some herb from China, and it will just say, herb.
Yeah. Like, to clear customs, I had to get all these forms.
Or an email. Email earlier today, like, well, I really hope that you did want sumac because we have 50 pounds of it coming. Like,
that's the thing. You have to be careful with him.
I said, give me 35 minutes, and I'll figure out how much sumac we have. I'd love to try something with it. And now we have 50 pounds of like Czech sumac coming our way.
I don't know what the fuck sumac is, man.
They use it in the Middle East. It's got a tart, tangy kind of flavor to it. It's pretty light in terms of its flavor, but it's got a nice acidity. And
yeah,
sort of like brightens up.
Yeah, like pre lemon, I think.
Yeah, sort of the way people. Yeah.
So you guys, like, as soon as cannabis is legal in Illinois, I feel like you guys are, like, on that to go.
It doesn't have to be legal.
Funny you should mention that.
I don't know.
Well, the thing is, you know, we got a aromatic oil spectrum of cannabis.
Yeah.
Right? So that's the magic. That just, like, shows you what the aromatic chemicals are, and about two-thirds of them are in hops. Mm-hmm. And then most of the chemicals are in hops. Guess what? Also in marijuana.
Yeah.
And then there's a few that are sort of outliers. So we're kind of thinking, what can we do with that information, you know? And, you know, Lagunitas is doing one where they're actually using hop aromatic oil extracts to make a beer.
Right.
But we'd rather have more fun and build it up from hops and other, you know, hops and bay leaf and juniper and whatever else we need to do, you know, that'd be more interesting, we think.
Right. So.
It feels like you guys, you know, where most breweries just kind of have, like, you know, one-off beers here and there, and they just stick to their core lineup all year. You guys are kind of like the exact opposite, and it's like one-off beers like all year long with all these crazy ingredients.
I think that's definitely the background that I came from. Most recently, lager brewer to start out with, which is day in, day out, lager. but for the last few years, that's what I was doing. It was, you know, let's make this beer, and then this beer becomes 12 different beers. You know, you have a 20 barrel tank and it becomes 12 different beers, or it becomes, you know, a cask of this, a firkin of this, a sixel of that, a half barrel of that. And I think that's sort of what Robert and Randy envisioned when they started this place. Maybe I'm a little off base with that, but
it's part of it. It's just, we're a brew pub, so it's hungry. Okay. Right. And we got people come in more than once a week and they want something different every single time they walk in the door. So Nick's been doing a ton of these like one-off kegs. We've got the one right here that has the, what are the flavors in there? Coconut?
Tangerine, coconut, and guava. Yeah,
right.
The piccolo sour?
Piccolo sour. So
not a sour. So the piccolo is our series that's a table New England IPA.
Okay.
Work in
hazy
progress,
hazy IPA. But. It's a work in progress. It's a series, and we're gonna keep rolling with it. And we're loving the direction that it's gone so far. And it's got a lot. It's got a lot more directions to go. So, yeah. Okay. But this is just a one off to try.
But you can just open the spear on the keg, put some stuff inside, put that spear back in, and then you got a special beer.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know. So we've always got one or two of those on, and so you know people definitely want that variety. Mm-hmm. And, you know, on the market's a different matter. We got four packs in the market, and we squirt out a little bit of New England and a few other one-offs on draft. But so from the outside, you know, look at us on the shelf, we look like, you know, not that different in terms of the number of beers, because you can't, not everybody can be Pipeworks, right? and that's not really a sustainable model.
But you guys have been doing those can releases. The most recent one was the Ghost Tropic about 3-4 weeks ago now. Unless there was another
Tommy
one.
Chubb.
That was a little longer than that. But about 6 weeks ago.
So
yeah.
The Ghost Tropic was the most recent one I came in for and picked that up. And we had that. And that was a great beer. And we were talking about the price of that four-pack, right, Nick? And then you were recently at...
Corridor.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I noticed the Crowler was... a different price point. If I got two glasses of the beer at the bar, right, equivalent to a crawler, the glasses of beer on draft at the bar were priced totally differently from that same beer in a crawler.
Yeah. Is there, I guess, a reason, any light you want to shed?
I'm not going too deep into it.
Which direction?
We can't talk about
which
corridor.
Direction. We love corridor. We love corridor.
Okay, guys, Roger used to work here.
Are we going to be nice to him? I thought this is our opportunity to dig into Roger.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that bastard.
Oh, that bastard
stole all our secrets.
Worst.
This is not a corridor dish. This is not that.
I hate that guy.
We should have said Brewery X. That's what we should have said.
Yeah.
We're screwing up.
All right, Randy, you keep talking. I gotta email Brewery X back real quick.
Those New England beers are stupid expensive to make.
And we're at it. It's interesting how the pricing works for cans. And you know, we're not going to get into the economics of you know, cost of ingredients and all that, but. One of the interesting dynamics is we not only do we sell packaged beer out of the restaurant here,
right.
We also distribute to our retail partners in the trade. We've got a great partner next door. We've got Binnie's are great partners of ours. And we have to be careful on how we price things out of the restaurant. We can't undercut our partners at retail. And so we have to partner and be smart about our pricing, and that's where perhaps some of the difference in, if you were to get the calculator out and do a per ounce calculation, it's not going to be the same. And we just want to be we want to make sure that we are being good partners with our retailers.
That makes sense.
It's not a great answer.
No, we have
but it's something that we have to consider. And you know, we just, our New England series, we can't produce enough to satisfy the market at this point in time. Yeah. And so anyway, it's interesting. I'm glad you brought it up because it's an interesting dynamic about pricing. But anyway, we certainly care about our retail partners, and we have to be cognizant of how those things come out from our restaurant.
That makes sense. We recently had a conversation with someone about like, if a brewery is next door, like, and get this case, well, shouldn't I just go next door and buy their beer? It's going to be cheaper. But if you're really a thrifty beer drinker, you just fill up growlers around town and do it that way. But that's not how it works most of the time. You're looking for something that you can have a few of, maybe go back to next week. So,
yeah, it's interesting. You know, pricing is, it can be a hot button issue, and, you know, we're interested in being good partners to the people that come in, walk in our door, and we're also interested in being good partners to our retailers who support us and, you know, are great advocates of Forbidden Root and what we do.
Sure. Well, we were talking all about the flavors of the beer, and then we had food out here, too, that we dove into.
Yeah, let's please talk about the food. Yeah. Our chef does an incredible job. You guys talked about the burger, and I've had everything except for that duck confit.
Oh, man, it's dynamite, man. You got to get in there.
The these are actually new on the menu. The pork ribs with what is it? It's a blackberry. It's a blackberry barbecue sauce on top of coleslaw. Mm-hmm. They're fantastic. I had some of those for
deconstructed jardiniere. Okay. It's like deep fried deconstructed jardiniere. All the ingredients in jardiniere deconstructed and fried.
Pickled in house. We use a ranch dressing with spices from Epic Spice across the street.
Also house made.
House made.
Oh, nice.
You know, you were talking about the number of beers that continue to get created and put out here at the Brew Pub. It is the creative juices that are in this building between Chef Dan and Randy and Nick and Phil. It's incredible. It's all. I'm not saying it's a competition, but it's an incredible collaboration. And this is their outlet to really, you know, let's produce something new that people can try every time they come in here. There's a new way to experience food and flavor with beer. And it's fascinating. It's really an incredible dynamic to watch and witness here as somebody who is not creative and just somebody that can watch it happen. But we're blessed to have Chef Dan in here that is really in lockstep with Randy and Nick and Robert in the pursuit of flavor and experience.
So there is he often trying to see what you guys are doing and plan for some of that as far as the restaurant goes.
He is, and we've just started doing like a beer pairing menu every couple weeks. I think has been the schedule that we've been doing it on. It's pretty flexible, but beer pairing menu, I don't know, there's a huge amount of them in Chicago. It's popular definitely on the East Coast, New England area, where you have a set number, like you'll have a set menu, and when you walk into the restaurant, reservation or not, you have the option of buying into it, and you'll usually do 3 to 4 course, maybe a mousse bouche, maybe
it's a prefix.
A prefix menu, but with the beer. And we've just started doing those in the last couple months. And Chef Dan and I, based on our schedules, have sort of sat down a little bit, sort of had a few beers, and we've been trying to really collaborate. The last one, I think, we did the most amount of collaboration on. Usually because the brewing schedule, you know, if we're doing something twice a month, we can't really alter our brewing schedule to be like, yeah, we got this beer pairing menu in a couple of weeks. I'm going to brew a whole batch just for that one evening where we're going to sell 45 plates or 100, even 145 plates. We blow it out. But so far, so good on that. We've both walked away from it every time that we've done it feeling really good about it. And we both wanted to get really, really goofy with it at the same time. I mean, last week I came in and I was like, Dan, I think for the next one, maybe we do like an Egg McMuffin and beer pairing, and he will do his own dish and an old style pairing. Like, let's just go from big round weird things in the center. And he's an incredible mind to work with because he's absolutely willing to explore whatever option.
Well, and what it is about Dan, it's not, he doesn't cook with food, he cooks with ideas.
Okay.
Right? So that's what we loved about him right from the very first interview with him, is that he really understands ideas and to make a point and to bring up these like funky old references like the jardiniere, but to completely turn them around and put them in a new context that makes you look at them differently and think about them differently. I mean, that's the art, you know, that's the real art. Beyond the great technical skills and palette and everything, that ability to translate a concept and put it into a form that's fascinating and makes you kind of think about it differently.
Yeah, for sure. Go ahead.
Now, how's it been on the street? Like, this neighborhood is always evolving, and I know there was, like, early on about getting permits cleared for like brew pub and stuff like that. So
yeah, because they lifted a ban on Chicago Avenue. I was here the night that the council came.
The giant meeting.
We
never really, like, we had 300 people show up and they took a vote and it was 260 in favor, 10 on the fence, and 5 opposed.
Yeah, okay.
And so it was like, yeah, we're gonna have a brew pub here. You know. And then it was just working out the who had to save face or whatever, you know. So
there's so many neighborhoods been awesome like that people don't know.
We try and be neighborhood. You know, we really value the people that come in and bring their kids, the moms that come here and in here for lunch, and you know, the people that, like, we really want to be a neighborhood place. We want to have people from Ukraine and China and Japan and wherever too, but like, we really want to be a neighborhood place because that's just the kind of place we want to be.
And it's a beautiful space too. I don't, if anyone hasn't been here. Yeah.
The old movie theater.
Exactly.
Yeah. From about 1910.
Yeah.
So it's still a little bits of the old stuff left. mostly stripped out, but there's just enough.
Yeah.
But this has always been a place for community.
Right.
It's been a movie theater.
Yeah.
People come here to gather and to enjoy themselves.
It was called The Hub.
The Hub. Yeah. This was literally a community center for Catholic Charities after that. Now this is a place where people can come and enjoy food and drink and the neighborhood and each other. And so it really follows in line with that, what this space has always been for the neighborhood. And the neighborhood has certainly reacted in favor of this and continuing space for community. It's really been awesome.
Yeah, having that historical perspective on a space and reinventing it. That's what this town's all about. I love it. That living, breathing museum kind of perspective. I think it's cool as
well. Well, and I'd also love to say that, like, just even within the professional, like, brewing community, because we were so close to the, you know, quote unquote brewing district, you know, with On Tour and
Goose,
Great Central, Finch. We're not part of that, but we're so close to it. We're a not quite 10-minute walk. You know, a leisurely, not quite 10-minute walk.
That's true.
Well, and you have food that
I don't think any of them.
All right.
Absolutely right.
And but they've been gracious enough to sort of include us in a lot of the events that they want to put on. And we've become really close friends with a lot of those people down there. We're grateful to have them. So it's not just a neighborhood in terms of like the people, the residents, but also in terms of the businesses that are around here. I think I'm personally grateful to have that many brewers close by in case you need help,
an ingredient.
You need help, you need an ingredient, you need a brain to bounce something off of, anything.
Car for a little. No.
I mean, you know.
What's your girlfriend doing?
Just wondering if you're the missing dog. What are we doing? No, I know, but you bring up a good point, man, because, you know, I don't. You guys have spent time in other cities, and I've always wondered, like, we hear this a lot. It's a common thing in Chicago, man, how, like, all these breweries, it's kind of like, it is, like, Chicago's such a cool namesake town that all these breweries are the rising tide, floats all ships kind of thing. Based on if you guys have spent time in other cities, is it like that in other towns? You brewed in other towns. Is it that kind of camaraderie everywhere, or?
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah.
I think it is.
I think with the amount of breweries that have been opening up in the last, just the last 10 years since I've become a brewer professionally. It was 100% the case 10 years ago, and maybe it's become a little bit less and less, but that's because, you know, any population that grows that much, you lose a little bit of touch with your center.
Yeah.
But ultimately, yes, brewers are pretty chill group of people to be around. Like, we just want to help. We're people pleasers in the extreme because, you know, we want to literally make a product that makes people feel good. So, you know, you ask a question, you're going to get some sort of positive answer, whether it's a direct positive or a very, you know, sort of verbose positive. It's going to be a positive answer.
Yeah.
The brewers, everyone that I've ever met, you certainly meet an asshole every now and again, but they're few and far between.
And the hard part now is there's so many opening up, it just takes a while to get to know them.
We're in the brew club era, so sure.
There's 230 now, and 2014 there were 100.
Right, yeah, we talk about that all the time. We can't keep track of it, and people are like, oh, but out here in the suburbs, it's like, I can't even make it to the breweries that are, like, a mile from my house.
I'm having a hard enough time getting too spiteful.
I still haven't been.
I'm having a hard time. Yeah. So, Randy Mosier, you opened up one of the three new 12-ounce cans, right? This is Hay Fever?
Yeah, this is Hay Fever. This is a beer we started working on about a year ago, I think, or a year and a half ago. So it's a Saison. Nick can talk about the beer a little bit and the yeast and things like that. But we wanted to have, we just thought a dry hop Saison would be a nice style to go to. And just to have that, you know, we were talking about fridge beers. It's kind of a fridge beer. Just a beer that's like doesn't have a lot of stuff in it. It's not complicated, but it's got a lot of depth to it. And nice character.
So, yeah, this beer was the first one that I actually had a direct hand in when it came on. The idea for the beer had already been floated, and we knew that we needed to have a core beer that was sort of like just across-the-board approachable, but interesting enough to really be a part of our core. And my previous brewery that I had been running in North Carolina was big on the Belgian stuff, sour and mixed culture, but we also did a few clean beers. And I've always also personally just loved Saisons. They're just kind of the mixed bag of the beer world. Like you can have almost anything represented in the Saison style category. So with this one, I was just sort of going for a beer that could be an everyday drinker, whether you're at the ballpark in the sun, whether you're at home by yourself. What, are you shaking your head?
No, because we got the.
Because
we're in the brewery.
Well, I believe you. This isn't working.
And it's really kind of noisy.
He doesn't believe you, like, Williams.
But yeah, Kevin's like, no way. No way that beer is shit.
I'm more likely to have like a Saison or a sour, I was telling Kevin. Saison or a sour in the fridge over like a lager or a Pils.
So
I can appreciate
it. And with this one, we just, it's a classic kind of a French Saison. French Saison was the yeast. The grain profile was very sort of basic with a little bit of a twist on it. Nothing really that's going to surprise anybody. But doing zero bittering hops and only whirlpool and dry hop for this beer, and all being El Dorado, kind of sets it apart a little bit. Doesn't make it too crazy. Makes it very accessible. And I'm happy with it. Randy,
The trick with this, with Belgian yeast always, especially with the Saisons, is that they have a lot of peppery, kind of phenolic peppery kind of quality. And that tends to fight the hops a lot. So we went through kind of some like North American type of hops, and we went through some European type of hops. And it was sort of a fight. Yeah. And then we like El Dorado here. It has a nice, like, clean pineapple-y kind of aroma in there. We can get them, and they're not stupid expensive. Yeah. And so El Dorado just turned out to be, like, a really nice hop with this yeast. So that was a critical kind of final piece, along with just some details of the creaminess and the overall strength and some things like that that we fine-tuned. So
right on.
Cool. So what's next? What do you got coming up? What's in the tanks? What's... plan, ingredients.
No kudzu plants, right? That's out.
No kudzu plants.
I don't know. I wouldn't say that.
No immediate.
I'm intrigued.
No immediate kudzu. We've got. We've been working on a. Sort of complement my background. We've had a lager that was brewed over a month ago that we're going to do a full lager on. That's hopefully by the end of April going to be out. We're tasting that every few days. In the fermenters, we've got a few fun different things. We got a Saison that was brewed with some heirloom barley varieties from North Carolina. Some friends of mine that started a malt house in North Carolina. We've got a beer in made entirely with their malt, entirely North Carolina grown. And we'll be on tap in their hospitality suite, Riverbend Malt House North Carolina. We'll be in their hospitality suite at CBC in a week.
Is that the Spruce Tips one?
Spruce Tips and Genepi. So this is an Alpine farmhouse ale. Genepi is, you might know actually a little bit more about it. I just know it as a really cool flavor.
Genepi is a wild alpine herb. It's a wormwood variant.
Okay.
That is so rare that it is forbidden to wild harvest it, except in parts of France where licensed harvesters can go out and harvest it. And then there are some people in Italy that are planting it. They make a liquor called Genepi that is with this wormwood herb. It has this incredible, bright, piney, winter, evergreeny sort of aroma that's just sort of magical. And Robert was in Paris and found an herb supplier and badgered him and, in, you know, his fractured French, and somehow we managed to get a couple of kilos of this very rare and expensive herb. So we're looking forward to having that on tap. Yeah, he's got some of the herb. You guys can give it a sniff.
Oh, yeah, we'll take a
It's pretty
smell
unique
of that.
And really fabulous.
William failed on us, man.
Yeah.
But he's back with, what are we calling this again?
Genepi.
Genepi.
Oh, fuck. Isn't that nice?
I'm trying to describe like what I'm smelling.
Yeah, please do. Hopefully you can, because I haven't really found the right.
We had a sort of an evergreen lemon tree outside. It wasn't a juniper, I don't think, but it was sort of in that family. And I used to, as a kid, just like sticking my nose in that, and it's like that's what that smells like.
Yeah, juniper, a little bit of that chamomile that we were saying earlier.
Pine needles, or you know.
So, have you guys? Have you thought about what happens after you outgrow this space with ingredients and beer? Like, any plans there? Or do you like the brew pub aspect where you're kind of contest and have this community here?
I think personally, you know, we love being able to make some large production core beers. And I think between the Wildflower Pale Ale and the Strawberry Basil Hefeweizen and the Hay Fever, we've hit on some really good notes. But I think everybody's passion is really in doing fun stuff, original stuff all the time, and seeing how that can sort of dovetail into the next thing that we're really excited to turn a large population onto.
Yeah, I mean, Robert's talked about maybe opening another brew pub type of thing, maybe somewhat different in its configuration in another state. We'd love to get a facility where we can do some wild and sour and barrel and that kind of thing, and really fully take advantage of Nick's skills and experience.
Yeah.
That would be really cool for us to do. So we've got, there's so many. We have many, many needs.
Yeah,
we could use a 30 barrel brewery right now. Wouldn't be a bad idea.
Yeah.
Well, at least hopefully by the end of the year we'll be ready for that. But it's not going to happen for a while. But you know, so we got all kind of possibilities. So right now we're just trying to build that brand. Get on the market, make sure people know who we are, build from one success to another, and keep rolling.
Yeah.
You guys are making some fantastic gateway drugs here for the folks, right? You know, people.
We try to do.
And then we talk about depth of breweries in Chicago all the time, and how everyone's in their own lane doing their own thing, and you don't really see that in other cities. And I think this is ground zero for something like that when we're talking about like guys that are really like pushing the envelope, you know, on cool stuff. So I'm glad we're here, man.
Yeah, so if you're in the area, definitely make it. If you're not in the area, make a trip. Good afternoon for, like we said, food and beer. Like, check it out here on Chicago Avenue.
Right on, man.
Yeah. So, thanks, guys, for joining us.
Thanks
great.
So much. Yeah.
Thanks for coming in. You guys are the greatest.
Yeah, man. Kevin, Nick, Randy.
Those
atomics are catching up to me, man.
And we lost Phil. Phil is an important part. We got to remember Phil. Yeah. Phil is an important part. While we're doing this fun stuff, Phil is actually working and doing brewery stuff.
Nice. And then how often are the releases happening for the one-off cans here? So people,
The one-off cans being mostly in New England, they're happening as the, you know.
The answer is approximately every 6 weeks.
Okay. Every 6 weeks is.
So Facebook, Twitter is the best place to keep up with that.
Yeah. Instagram and Facebook. Kevin loves Twitter, so Twitter, I guess, as well.
I guess I'm the only one. But
Kevin's kind of a twit-er.
Fair enough.
Because, yeah, through the magic of Facebook, you got to be friends with everybody you went to high school with. Fuck that.
Yeah, Twitter's what you never even heard of. So it's,
Every 6 weeks is a good barometer for New England's, and we'll mix that in and increase that number as we get rolling a little bit. But that's a nice complement to the three styles of 12-ounce cans that we've got out of retail, and We're pretty excited about our schedule and, and what we got coming down the line.
Right on.
Well, that'll do it for this week's episode. We'll be back next week in the studio. And yeah, take care.
Cheers.